Access number 29996, Mr. Mike Brown, Reel 7. Now, if we could just look at a typical day's routine while you're in the camp, that gives us a lot of things. Well, let's start with the roll call, I think.
Well, we went out for a roll call in the morning, and we were all lined up in fives. And the Germans went down counting, and we stayed out there until they got the number right, which they didn't usually do that first time, or at least they pretended they didn't. After that...
What was the... I mean, were you all well-behaved in the roll call?
Well, no, we just stood there, really. Sometimes we wanted it finished with quickly. We weren't very happy with it. And then we... the rest of the day was more or less our own. Soup came, was brought in, so-called soup in barrels. Somebody went to fetch it. Round about midday, I suppose. And rest time was... a lot of us tried to go walking. We used to walk round the circuit, as it were, walk round the perimeter of the... of our compound. And
now, what was the point of that?
Well, really, for exercise. That's the only thing. We had nothing else. All of us, we were all airborne people there, NCOs. It was an NCOs camp, you see, where you didn't work, corporals and above. And there was nothing there organized. We'd all gone there and we had nothing. We were had the clothes we were captured in. The only people that really had anything at all were the medical orderlies. They were allowed to keep their packs. And anyhow, we'd walk round there for exercise, perhaps in the morning and in the afternoon, two or three times round. Nobody really did anything else.
Did you talk to each other?
Yes, well, we met other glider pilots there, because until then I hadn't met many glider pilots, and several others of my squadron came in later, and we found out what they'd done, you know, what had happened to them and what had happened to so-and-so and all that business. But to start with, oh yes, we were, it was a friendly lot, really. But
I mean, was there any trouble between prisoners at all? I mean, because you know, some people get a bit.
I don't, not that I know of. At that stage, you see, none of us knew really what we were doing, to be honest. Later on in the day, when it's sort of evening, we'd get the bread ration, which was divided with something, you know, with the cheese or whatever. And the other thing that happened every night was someone came round and read the news to us. Somewhere there was a wireless, obviously. Now, in this camp, there was another compound. Well, there were several compounds, but there was another compound of British people who'd been prisoners. A lot of those have been prisoners of war since Dunkirk. You know, they were well organized, well equipped. They had all the clothes, they had everything. But they didn't want to give us very much, funnily enough. One of the other compounds was full of Russians who had absolutely nothing. And this man, he was a glider pilot. He used to come round every night and read us the news. Now, where he'd got it, nobody was to ask anything about it. He just read the news out every evening to tell us how things
were
going.
Was it detailed or, you know, just sketchy?
Well, it was quite you know, rather like you would get on the wireless. Quite a good news. And then we'd digest it and say, what did so-and-so, someone had said something in the speech, what did so-and-so mean by that? No, and that was quite good. For there were a few books to read. Now, most of these were old books, books that nowadays would probably be worth a lot of money because they all had that beautiful gold carving on the outside. And I remember earlier on in the war, the Red Cross asked for people to turn out their cupboards with books. And of course, they slung out all these old, ancient books, you know, Victorian books. Some of them you just could not read, you know. So, dear reader, and that sort of thing. We tried one or two. The best one we ever had was Bleak House, Dickens. And we used to take it in turns and sort of read a chapter each and perhaps discuss it, you know. But there weren't that many books. Later on, we did try to get some classes going. And I was decided I would try and learn bookkeeping and shorthand. I thought they'd come in useful, you know.
How were these educational classes organised?
Well, somebody obviously who knew, probably had done it in civilian lifestyle, they were willing to do it. And we just put our names down and went along. And somehow or other, presumably from the Red Cross, we got a pencil and a couple of sheets of paper. And we went into it didn't last very long, because it was starting to get cold. And of course, there were some of the places there was no glass in the windows, but they had shutters on. And we were cold. You know, it got to the state when we were too cold to do anything, really. And later, some people actually, I think, stopped in bed all day.
Now, anything else you were doing during the day? Any theatre or, concert party?
No, we went to, I remember going to see one thing performed by the other compound, the British soldiers, you know, the ones that had been there a long time. I went to see The Man Who Came to Dinner. I remember going to see that.
Any good?
Well, yes, it was good. Well, anything was good like that. And I believe there was one. We tried to put something on. Some other people did a sort of review. And we were in. Some glider pilots got together. And we were in an adaptation of Monday Night at 8. That was really the only entertainment that we had. The other thing I was going to say, I forgot.
Any sport?
No sport. Well, no, there wasn't any sport because nobody had anything. We still only had the clothes. We stood up into stuff. Now, you might like this bit. It was my birthday, my 21st birthday was coming. And
that'd be, what, November?
November. And my trousers had been cut off, you see. And the bottom of my one leg was pinned together with the other, you know, to the other. And a few pairs of trousers came in. And it was decided that anybody with, you know, badly worn trousers would get a new pair. And it so happened, on my birthday, I got a new pair of battle-dress trousers, which was really the best thing you could hope for. You know, I couldn't have had a better present, could I? Eventually, we got a battle-dress tunic, because I hadn't had the battle-dress top. When I'd been taken, I'd only had an airborne smock. And even later still, we were issued with a greatcoat. Now, this wasn't a British Army greatcoat, which are magnificent things. This was an Hungarian something other, I guess, that was so thin. They were bluish green, and they were so thin. We were all issued with those. I mean, a good British Army greatcoat's a magnificent thing. Keeps the rain out and the cold. But that's all we had issued there. We also eventually, I think we got a towel probably from the Red Cross. But we had no actual Red Cross deliveries. You see, I know my parents sent various things off from this country, which of course never arrived. You know, pullovers and all that sort of thing done through the Red Cross.
You able to communicate by writing? Or
we could write. I think we could write once a week. But we never had any letters back. We never got any letters.
Did they get your letters?
Yes, they did. And they did write.
About? What kind of, I mean?
Well, I didn't write about much. I just said, you know, we were still here and around. So you could, not much you could write about that was of interest. And each other said, well, my leg's getting better sort of thing, you know, because they were obviously worried. But, some of these things that my parents sent were actually returned at the end of the war. And I think some of the letters. But we had no communication at all with anybody. No, we didn't know what had happened about us.
Now, what about the guards? How did you get on with the German guards?
Well, we didn't see a lot of them. They were outside in their compounds, and the only time they really came in is when they came to count us.
And what was their attitude? Were they friendly or unfriendly? Or
well, I don't think they were. The thing was, some of them were Poles, and of course, we had a few Poles with us that had been captured because the Polish brigade landed at Arnhem, and of course they were chatting away. But I didn't really have anything at all to do with guards. I didn't. The only place I used to go to the hospital place, it wasn't the hospital, but we had a medical centre for them to look at my leg and change the bandages and put more of this aquaflavin on, and that's all they had. That's what I was going to tell you, bandages. Well, the bandages weren't bandages as such. They were crepe paper, toilet roll stuff. And I never forget, I used to wrap it round my leg beautifully. It looked lovely. You'd take a couple of paces, and of course you'd stretch the darn thing. And it was nothing to see people walking round the compound with a trail of paper coming from their trousers where it had come undone. But that's all they ever did. They put this aquaflavin on. That's all they ever had to put on it.
Now, what about, was there any escape organisation within the camp, or had that all stopped? I think it had stopped.
Well, it did stop. We didn't have anything really to do with that at that stage.
Did you ever think of escape, or was it just...
Not really, no. I mean, our real thing, the only time when we started walking, at once...
I'll come to the area. But when you were in the camp...
No, we didn't...
Now, anything else about life in the camp? Because you were there about 3 or 4 months, weren't
Well,
you?
We spent a lot of time cooking. We'd get these Red Cross parcels and we'd grate things up and make puddings from biscuits or whatever was in the Red Cross parcel. And we spent quite a bit of time cooking and talking about the meals we wanted or missed. We spent a lot of time. I don't really remember anything else at this stage.
It says you moved huts.
Yes. We moved from one compound to another. I'm not sure why, but it was just in time because to keep the fires burning to do our cooking on, they'd been up in some of the more active ones had been up in the roof, pinching some of the rafters, you know, and the support. And it started to sag. But anyhow, we moved hut. I don't really know why. I just put it down.
Now, what happens next then? Any Christmas celebrations?
No, not really. We could hear, I think, the Germans or someone singing their barracks, but nothing else. We had nothing at all. Nothing spectacular.
Now, it says in January the 7th, reprisals begin. Palias's table.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about that. What reprisals for what?
These were reprisals, we understood, from and I can't see why it came now. The Canadians or somebody had tied people's wrists together, where the prisoners had been taken. But I thought that was dear. But anyhow, somebody had tied some German prisoners' arms together, and they didn't like that. Therefore, they came and took our palliasses away, and therefore we were sleeping just on the bare boards. I think we'd had two blankets. I think we each had two blankets, which wasn't very nice. I can't remember anything else much there.
Now, anything else before you move then? Because you seem to go, you get less and less food.
Well, that's it. We were getting less and less because, partly, you see, I think because Sudan railway system was being shot up, wasn't it? And yet I believe there, when we eventually got out, some of the people that were left behind in the hospital, they found a storeroom full of Red Cross parcels that had not been issued. And of course, I think it was a bit of a game, bit of a chore for the Germans to issue them, because they weren't just issued as such. All the tins had to be opened to stop escaping. And, you know, it must have been a bit of a chore for them to issue such things.
Now, what happens next then? The start of the March, it begins on 8th of February. Anything else before that, remember?
Not that I can remember.
Were you warned about the start of the March?
Well, I think we knew about a day before. Oh, I tell you what we had seen. At the end of our compound, we had seen refugees from Germany going past. The horse-drawn, whole families, horse-drawn vehicles. And the other thing I saw there was a car, probably a Mercedes, towed by a horse. Now, I remember seeing the film, H.G. Wells' film in 1935 or something, The War of the Worlds, whatever. And at the end of that, there is a Rolls Royce being towed by a horse. And I'll never forget that. It was very like that. These refugees were passing the end of the camp. We could see them for days before we went. And then the next lot that passed were, I think, the RAF from Sargon. They went past a few days before us.
So, did you make any preparations?
Not really. There's not much we could do. We were all going to take blankets and, you know, strung round us. But when we got out that morning, all the blankets had to be taken back in. They didn't want us to take those. So, really, we had just our Well, we had that greatcoat thing, which was about all for the winter.
Now, what was the march? How did the march start? What do you remember about the first days?
Well, the first day was very... 'cause my leg had not healed up then. And
how bad was it?
Well, one part had healed, the other hadn't. And I went and said, look, I don't think I can do this march. And it must have been Jim Dot said, oh yeah, you'll be all right. So I had to go. Well, it was good to walk, but I can't remember how they'll say on the other bit of paper how long we did the first day. But it was quite a long way for us. We'd never been out before. It was nice to be out.
What was the weather like?
Cold.
Because you left on the 8th of February.
Well, it was snow on the ground. Snow had been there since about October. There was snow on the ground. And as we were going along to start, we could see bits of equipment and stuff that the RAF people found too heavy to carry. I remember there was a musical, I think it was a trumpet or something. You know, someone had thought, oh, I'll take this with me. But it was too much to carry for them, and it was just cast at the side of the road. You know, you could have picked it up and taken it if you could have carried it. But we just walked and walked. We were told we were going to walk for 3 days and then we'd get a train. But we didn't get the train. And we finished up in this brick field that first night.
What was it like in there?
Wasn't very nice. There were all these bricks lying about. We tried to make a sort of shelter for ourselves. But you can't do much in a brick field. And then the next few days were either in a field or a wood. The fields were often sports fields, attached to a village probably, where they had a running track round the outside. And we weren't obviously allowed on the running track. We were kept inside the running track. And, we just walked and walked. And when we, at night time, four of us used to huddle together. I read somewhere in a book years later, it was called Spooning, where you all huddle together, you all lie on your, say, your left-hand side, together. And then, after a while, you all turn and lie on your right-hand side, so as you, and you keep each other warm. And you take turns on being on the inside or the outside, you know. You take it in turns. Because on your own, I think you would have probably frozen.
How tough were you finding the march?
Oh, I just struggled. I just walked. That's really about all. It wasn't easy at all. And later on, we had the odd day of rest on the march. And then the next day, after a day of rest, we could not move. Everything seems to have tightened up. First mile or two was really, really a struggle. What else on the march? Well,
anything happened? Any incidents?
One day we stopped somewhere along the road, and further down in the column, you could see somebody went to one of these potato clamps or something to get. Grab what they were, a Swede or whatever, try and grab a bit of food. And one of the guards shot him. I do remember that.
Do you know what circumstances, or did you see it, or was it just...
Well, I know, I saw, you know, the guard was near us, and the bloke was away down, you know, way down the road, as it were. But he was an efficient guard, or so he thought. Obviously, he didn't want to go to the Russian front. The other thing I've just thought of, one day, well into the march, an old man, one of these old Germans, he looked old, probably only about 40, but he came, sidled up, he had no teeth, and gave me a little crust of bread. Obviously, he couldn't eat it. And I found out later he'd done it to one or two other people, you know. The crust, the bread was too tough for him because.
Now, anything else in the march?
One day I remember we marched. When we were marching, we came across a lot of damaged aircraft, presumably shot down. They looked like American great big silver things. I don't think they'd been collected there. You know, they weren't all in a nice, neat pile. They were just scattered in the fields as though a lot of them had been shot down on various raids. I do remember that. Otherwise, I can't think. We stopped in a riding school one night on the peat there. And one time we stopped in a camp for the night. We were hoping we were going to stop there for good. And I have a feeling we had a shower there.
Now, you were doing this from 8th of February to the 10th of March.
So that's
you're,
right.
You're heading for Bad Or, which is Stalag 9B.
Well, we didn't know where we were going, and we didn't. To be honest, I think we went round in circles a bit, because, you know, that we never really knew where we were going to finish up the next night. We didn't know how long the journey was going to be, and we just went where we were told. The other thing, I do remember one day, we were marching along, and suddenly someone started singing up the front. And everyone started singing, you know, as they used to on route marches in the First World War. It only happened for an hour or so, and then it was stopped. The Germans stopped it.
And what were you singing? What type of thing?
Well, all the old things, you know, Tipperary, I suppose, and all the old songs that people in the Second War didn't sing like they used to in the First War, where they did a lot of route marches. But all the common songs, it was quite good. It cheered everyone up a bit. And another thing I do remember, one day we went through a village, and the women there had come out, and they put buckets of water out for us to have a drink. And I remember a German, one of the guards, coming along and turning them all up. We couldn't have a drink of water. I remember that, because I wanted a drink desperately. And it was very, very tempting to have pinch some snow, you know, get snow and, you know, to refresh yourself. But of course, anyhow, by this time, we'd all got lice, which we...
Now, why couldn't you get some snow? I mean, what was wrong with that?
Well, the thing was, it's not supposed to be good to eat snow. You know, we sort of moistened our mouths with it, but we didn't actually eat it, because we understood, I don't know whether that's right, that it was not good for us.
Now, what about this lice problem? Had that not been in the camp?
Not really, no. I remember one day in the camp, we'd been there quite a time, they'd suddenly found someone had lice. And I remember a medical orderly called us all again and said, most of you don't know what lice is. This is a louse. And they showed us. But in the camp there wasn't anything like that. In Falling Bostel, we all had fleas. I don't know why, but they all went. But then we got lice. And then, of course, we had dysentery.
On the march?
Towards the end of the march.
Tell me about the lice. How were the lice a nuisance? And then we're gone.
Well, we all started scratching. Even when I came home, and I'd been home a few weeks, I was still scratching, even though I hadn't got any lice. They were there. They were breeding in the seams of the battle dress. They seemed to breed. And you were there. And sometimes you used to pop them and try and kill them. Or you'd put a match to them. But you never really successfully got rid of the darn things, ever.